Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Philly Sports Passion Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Jacinto, and with me tonight are my co-hosts, Kyle Lawrence and Joe Wagner, who will join us soon enough, soon. How are you, Kyle?
I'm good, Eric. Thank you for having me on again.
Yep, no problem. Let's start with the Philadelphia Flyers and their offseason and what they need to do to get back to the Stanley Cup playoffs. As we wait for Joe to call in, and we'll just start with that.
The Flyers, I think Carter Hart has a bright future. Bernie Prant kind of said some similar comments recently, but if you look at the Flyers year in and year out, it's almost the same common denominator, the problem with them. Minus 2010, when they made that finals run and lost to Chicago, even then they had some goaltending problems. And this year, the amount of goals they scored was down, but they still ranked near the bottom in the NHL in goals against, 29th out of 31 NHL teams. And their power play has struggled at times. They have a lot of aging veterans that are still in the books. I thought it was interesting that at the end of the year, for the team awards, they gave Radko Gudas the best defenseman, the best Flyers defenseman for the year. And I don't think he's there. I don't think he's not only the best defenseman, but I don't think he's the answer or the solution to this team. I think this team needs to get younger and kind of grow with Carter Hart, who I think showed some impressive play this year, even though he was kind of struggled towards the end there. When you look at the Flyers, they had 8 goalies that dressed for a game this year, namely Hart, Brian Elliott, and there were some other guys, including Stolarz, thrown in there. But they're going to have to get this goaltending fixed. By keeping Hart here long-term and investing in him. Because obviously we saw what happened with Sergei Bobrovsky, at Snyder and management. They got too impatient waiting for him, traded him, and obviously he's flourished with Columbus now. And Columbus is actually ahead of, as the number 8 seed, Tampa, 2-0 with Bobrovsky. So Flyers have a lot of moves to do this offseason with Fletcher as GM.
Exactly. I think Joe is trying to call in. What do I?
Yeah, Joe's joining us. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yep. How are you doing, Joe?
Cool. Good. How about you guys?
Good. Yeah, so what are your thoughts on the Flyers offseason as they try to continue on with Carter Hart here? What do you think is the biggest pressing issue, Joe, would you say?
So just to piggyback off of what you touched on, when Radko Gudas is winning your top defenseman of the year award, you have a problem with the defense. He has improved his play, but he can't be your best guy. I think talent-wise, he's definitely one of their lower-ranked defensemen talent-wise. I mean, you look at guys like Provorov, Sanheim, Myers, just to name probably the top 3 talent-wise. Ghost definitely had a down year. Reports coming out that he has played through a knee injury all year. It would explain the lack of explosiveness and really his asset, his skating ability being down this year. But I think the first thing they have to do is address the defense and get that solidified in front of Carter Hart. I mean, Carter Hart's going to go into his first full season next year, so you can't have a defense in front of him that's going to have the mental and just, I guess, game plan lapses in front of him and leaving empty zones and shooters alone in front of him. I mean, I don't care who you are, that's not going to put your goalie in the best position for success. The best thing that the Flyers have going for them is they're going to have a lot of cap room this year. They're going to have a lot of assets to make a move and solidify both the top six, which I think they need to add a top six forward here, most notably second line center, bump Patrick down to that third line where he can get some more favorable matchups and have a little more chance to grow and sort of mature into the player that he showed he can be in stretches. I think you get a top four defenseman here, whether that be to pair with Provorov. I think that's what you should look for, is a guy that can pair with Provorov and just settle him in so he can go back to the player he was his first year. And then you just address the backup goalie situation. And really, I think you can look at this team to be not a Stanley Cup contender, but definitely a division contender for next year if they make the right moves and put the right coach in place.
Yep. Speaking of coaches, since our Coach Q is off the board, what do we do at coaching?
Well, I honestly was hoping for Joe Quenneville, but he went to Florida. The question is whether or not do they stay. The problem with the Flyers for years is they've stayed in-house a lot of times. I mean, they got Peter Laviolette. They got Mike Keenan. So there were guys that weren't in-house. But I think the common mistake for coaching is that you have to stay in-house and promote somebody that was your assistant head coach or with the organization. And I don't promote that all the time. I think if there's a really good coach out there on the market, honestly, I haven't really researched it because so many fans were so high on Quenneville being available.
Yep.
After he left Chicago. But I want to see what Joe thinks on this, because I'm not really sure what to do with coaching now that Quenneville's gone. But I guess if there's not really a whole lot of options on the market, since Gordon is an interim, either remove the interim tag and try him out on a one-year deal and see how that goes with Carter Hart here for a full year, and then maybe you add some, like Joe just mentioned, you add some off-season additions and see what Gordon does, or you find a guy that has some experience, unlike Hextall, who came from the collegiate ranks. So it should be pretty interesting to see. What do you guys think? I guess I'll ask you first, Joe.
So Gordon's done a good job. I think he came in and really put breathed the fresh air of life into these guys. That being said, I don't think he's the guy you move forward with. I think the Flyers have had too many instances where they've looked at simply the coaching change and extended guys based off the success from just the coaching change, which a lot of times isn't really attributed to the coach. It's just more attributed to the move of changing coaches. I mean, you look at some of the guys that are out there, and Bilsma's a name that's been thrown out a lot. He's not a guy I would like to see take over. Tippett
former
is...
LA coach?
Yes. Tippett is a guy that people are looking at. Suter they're looking at. I don't know who I want them to get, in all honesty. I just want somebody that's going to come in and work and isn't just a retread or something we've seen over and over again. I think the best coaching hire of the last 15 or so years was Laviolette. I think he yep. sort of had a raw deal in the way he was let go. But that's sort of not Laviolette, because I don't think he's going to get fired unless Nashville gets swept here in the first round. But somebody in that mold, somebody who has had some success, knows what it takes. Coach Q would have been a perfect fit because with the flexibility they're going to have as far as money and assets, he sort of could have put the stamp on his team and what he was looking for. And you really could have had some expectations set high, but moving forward, you're going to have another coach that can come in, sort of build the team around what his philosophy is, shape his philosophy into the team, and should have some success right away as long as all the right moves are made.
Yeah, it should be interesting, because before you move on, Eric, I just wanted to throw something out that Joe mentioned. The Flyers have a lot of cap flexibility. They're under $50 million as far as allocations, the amount of players that are on their payroll coming into next year. And there's some guys like Konechny, Verone, Lawton that are either unrestricted or restricted free agents. So, coach or not, it should be interesting offseason as far as what guys stay and, you know, if they go out and are very aggressive in free agency or not.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have a lot of personnel flexibility and personnel changes they'll be able to make this offseason. So it's a huge one. It can take them from being a legit contender in the division, or it can just solidify their place as the bottom team in the division. So a lot of eyes on Chuck Fletcher right now.
Exactly. What do they do with Mr. G? Captain,
I
entertain
would keep him.
Any trade offers? Yeah, I would keep him. How about you, Joe?
No, I'm not moving on from G. I think G is the move to left wing has invigorated him, and he's playing some of the best hockey he's played yet. I think if you want to move a big name, you got to look at really the only big name that would make sense would be Voracek. He's almost impossible to move, though. So I think you're not looking at a lot of subtractions. You're looking at a couple additions here.
Yep. What's a big name free agent that we could look at this offseason? Is there anybody either of you guys are targeting or anything?
I want Duchesne. Duchesne's my guy. I want him above anyone else. I think he slots in. He takes over that second center role. Instantly, you have forwards that can compete. The other guy that a lot of people, I don't think we're going to have a shot at him, but the other guy a lot of people are going to really want to look at is Carlson. But I don't think we're going to have a shot at him. I think Tyler Myers will be a more realistic defensive acquisition if we're looking.
Yeah, I think it says here that Bob is a free agent, but I was actually going to say Carlson as well, but Carlson is going to fetch so much money in free agency, it's going to be a betting war. We're better off looking at, you know, some of the other guys on the market, and from a defensive standpoint, guys like Tyler Myers, maybe like a third line guy, second line guy, like William Carlson. And then there's some older guys, but I would like to see them get younger. Like Joe mentioned, it's tough to move some of their contracts. So it looks like it's mostly going to be additions more than anything.
Exactly. Let's move on to some NHL predictions or thoughts on the first two games of each series and some games that are currently going on. What do you guys
know? It's been a shocker. The Columbus-Tampa series, Columbus is up 2-1 and won the game in Tampa tonight 5-1 to take another game in the series. And I was I wasn't watching the game, but I was keeping track of it live, the stats, and Tampa didn't have a whole lot more shots. At one point, Columbus had the shot advantage, and I believe they ended up with more shots than Tampa did tonight, and then they won by one goal the other day in game one, I believe on Wednesday night. And the Pittsburgh Islanders series is pretty interesting. I expect that to go six or seven games. I had Pittsburgh, I believe, winning that series in my bracket prediction. But so far, they're outside of the first series I mentioned, there hasn't been a whole lot of surprises. My finals prediction coming into the playoffs, to reiterate, because I think I told you, Eric, was Tampa versus Vegas, with Tampa winning it. But that doesn't look to be off to a good start with the way Tampa's looked. Tonight they were really sluggish on offense, and Bob just showed the fact that he can steal a game. And in game one, Columbus's offense just was able to get past Tampa's threshold. And I think Tampa Bay is stacked on offense. I don't think they have a great goaltending duo. So I think they're definitely beatable. But that was my prediction coming into the year. But it's been interesting so far, I'll put it that way.
How about your thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, so I did get to watch the Tampa and Columbus game tonight. Columbus looked just so much better. Tampa had a brief amount there where they controlled play in the third when they got their first goal, but it was quickly squashed when Columbus went ahead and scored again. I'm not sleeping on Tampa. I think going on the road here, getting some time to reset and maybe just focus a little bit more on playing the game, which it just looks like they haven't been doing right now. They've been coasting for about the last month or so of the season here, so their intensity level might not be where it needs to be in order to win. I still think they win the series. I think they bring it to seven, but I still think they win that series. Glad to see Pittsburgh get knocked around. I wasn't a believer in the Islanders. Just watching from the games they played with the Flyers, I didn't see anything about them that made them special, but they're beating up on Pittsburgh, and my number one team in the playoffs is anybody but Pittsburgh, so good to see Pittsburgh getting it handed to them. out west right now, I got the Seattle-Winnipeg game on, and Winnipeg just tied it up at 3. I think that's going 7. I think the San Jose series is going 7. Last I saw on that one, Vegas was up 3-0.
3-2
now. They hold on to it and even that up at 1. But yeah, I mean, in this first round, it looks like things are going to be wild. You got Carolina's not going to go away. Hopefully Pittsburgh gets knocked out here. Nashville, what would like to see Nashville rebound against Dallas. I think Nashville's too good to lose to Dallas, but interesting to see Dallas doing what they're doing after the whole fiasco with the owner calling out the 2-star players on the team. Playoff hockey is back. Gotta love it.
Yep. Who's your pick to win this cup?
I picked Nashville.
I picked Calgary and go ahead.
I was just going to say it's not looking good for Nashville just yet, but we'll take a look and see what happens here.
Yeah, I picked Calgary and Boston in the Bruins, just unfortunately winning and bringing another title to Boston. And I don't know why I picked that. It's the third title in 7 months. Hopefully I jinxed them, because Toronto put a beat on them last night. So, let's move on to 76ers and their series against the Brooklyn Nets. What do you guys thought? And how many games will it take for them to win?
Joe, do you want to go first?
Yeah. So, really, I think in what is going to be the biggest storyline of this series is Joel Embiid, listed as doubtful for game one. Definitely can't be the best news, but you would think without Joel, they can still beat the Nets.
Yeah.
When you look at guys like Simmons and Harris and Butler, who I think was reserving a little bit of his tank for the playoffs. So, you know, if Butler takes a step forward, I think the Sixers can go ahead and compete with the Bucks. I don't really see – I think six games is about right. So I don't think Embiid's going to miss many more than tomorrow. If he does miss more than tomorrow, you know, then you got a question there. But I think they have too much talent. Yeah, it's definitely scary if your best player is going to miss more time. But I don't think that even without Embiid, the Nets are going to be able to do much against the Sixers now. When you get in the second round and you see Toronto and Kawhi and those guys, and you better hope that Embiid's knee is feeling better. But yeah, I don't foresee the Nets being an issue.
I think the 76ers are going to probably beat them in about five. I think the series needs to end quickly because to give some rest to Embiid for the second round. That's going to be the toughest. That's going to be a tough series against the Raptors if the Raptors do beat the Magic. What's your thoughts,
Kyle? Well, honestly, you know, Embiid was complaining with left knee pain, and he had a good year this year in the four games versus Brooklyn. He averaged over 30 points and almost 15 rebounds per game, and the Sixers split the two games. Split the four games, two games apiece this year with Brooklyn, who has some pretty good shooters. They're one of the better three-pointing shooting teams in the league. And they have the former Laker, D'Angelo Russell, who had a good year. He was a decent shooter this year, but they have some other guys that are actually pretty good shooters. So you look at like some of their bench guys, like Jared Allen and Joe Harris. You know, they're very oriented as a team, and they're pretty deep considering that they were a number six seed. Thankfully, the Sixers wanted to play Boston in the first round, but Brooklyn has given them some trouble this year. And in the Sixers franchise all time, they've only played New Jersey / Brooklyn twice and split the series. So this is their only third time seeing them in the playoffs. Obviously, I know players change year to year, but there's not a huge amount of familiarity despite being a division rival and a team that's been in the same conference. But Brooklyn, they have a decent amount of scoring, but I agree with Joe. They're not just based on the fact that they can shoot when they're on their game, they can shoot well, but they're not an overly consistent team. They're not going to put up a huge amount of points. They ranked about average this year in points. And without Embiid, the Sixers are obviously a lot more stacked than they were in previous years, including last year with Harris and Butler around and another year in the books for Simmons, who I think has improved. So I see this team winning this series, but a lot of people are saying that if Embiid doesn't play the majority of the series, that it could be the biggest first round upset of the NBA quarterfinal playoffs. So it should be interesting. 2:30 start tomorrow on ESPN. Some good games on tomorrow. I think, like Joe said, if we do advance without mostly Embiid's help in this series, we wouldn't face Boston in the second round. If all four teams won their first game, first round series, but we would play Toronto. So obviously, I'm sorry. So some of their guys would give us fits, and I think we match up better with Brooklyn. And despite the fact that they had the best record in the East, I actually think we match up better against Milwaukee, who we almost defeated in the season finale despite some injuries. So it should be interesting to see. I think we win the series. I'm going to say 6 games, with most of the games being close. I think the point spread for tomorrow's game lowers. Currently, it's at 7.5 for the Sixers. And I think it'll be, like, you know, assuming Embiid doesn't play, I think it'll be a 3 or 4 point spread in our favor. So, should be fun.
Yeah. Do we all agree the Warriors are winning the title, or does anybody have a different pick? Mm-hmm.
Well,
go ahead, Kyle.
I think it should be pretty interesting. I think Golden State is going to be there as usual, as far as in the running. I think I wouldn't be surprised with Milwaukee with both their size and speed. They're not only one of the most talented teams in the paint and on offense in general, but they're just very strong defensively, and they wear you down. And I think it should be pretty interesting. They had over 5 guys that had double-digit points this year, so including Giannis. So it should be interesting. I think
yep.
Milwaukee is probably the team that comes out of the East. And I know it's cliche to say because they're both number one seeds, but I really could see Golden State and Milwaukee in the finals. But I wouldn't be surprised if Houston gets there because they have some experience. They have Harden. They have a talented roster front to back. And I think they have the talent to beat Golden State if they were to face each other in the West Finals.
Yep. What's your thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I don't see Golden State in the finals this year. I think they showed a lot of cracks this year for whatever reason. I know it's largely the same roster as last year, but they don't. They look different than they did last year. Houston, I think, really can beat them this year. I think they had a solid shot at doing it last year, and Houston got off to a bad start because of the Carmelo Anthony experiment, trying to force that to work, so they really didn't get into a rhythm until around midseason and started playing well. That being said, D'Antoni's style doesn't really translate into playoff success, but I think they could beat them, and I definitely think out of the East, if you are looking at Golden State making the finals, I definitely think the Bucks can beat them. I think a healthy Sixers team can beat them. I don't know if Boston can beat them. I think Toronto has a shot. Maybe not as good as the other two teams, just strictly on matchups. But Golden State's not invincible this year like they have been in the past, and I don't think we're going to see Curry holding the title this year.
I think the Celtics. I'm actually picking them to get upset by Indiana in the playoffs this year in the first round. I'm calling that right now. I don't know why, but I don't know what Boston team is going to show up. That's the cliche right there. Can the Celtics get come together as a team and play as talented as they are? Who knows?
Well, Marcus Smart injury is going to hurt them too, missing him for the first round.
Exactly. Do you guys want to move on to the Phillies and their bullpen woes and their win today, tonight?
Yeah, sure.
You want to go first, Joe?
Yeah. Phillies are – I'm not really putting a lot of slack on Gabe for, those last couple of games. And I think right now the biggest question mark the Phillies are looking at really is Nick Pivetta. There was those rumors out today that they were kicking the tires on Bumgarner, which I think you got to take a look at Bumgarner regardless of whether or not Pivetta can rebound and be the pitcher that they expect him to be. You know, really finding that third star to roll into the playoffs with. You got to have three in the playoffs that you can rely on. They have two right now, and Arrieta looked really good tonight against a really bad Marlins team, but you'll take it, and I hope he can build off of it. This lineup is dangerous, and it's a playoff lineup that can battle with great pitching. So you're looking at a really good team here. I think the bullpen will settle out here. You know, as far as Kimbrel goes, I'm not looking to go sign him right away. But, you know, if the bullpen continues to struggle and if guys like Sir Anthony and Robertson don't get it together and aren't guys that you really can depend on, you have to look outside for answers because those were your guys that you had in the lockdown, 7, 8, 9 innings. And if you're going to continue to roll Vince Velasquez out as your number five, then you're definitely going to need some strong bullpen guys because he's never going more than 5 innings. Kyle?
Yeah, honestly, Eflin has really impressed me this year. His breaking ball has been fantastic. He has a sub-1 ERA. He's undefeated. Nola is off to a poor start. Arrieta has had some good starts. And Pivetta has just been a train wreck. And Velasquez, I think he belongs better in the bullpen as a long reliever. Some people tossed around the idea of him being a closer, but I don't want another Mitch Williams. I don't want another guy that could strike out the side or could walk 4 guys in a row and lose the game. Honestly, you want a reliable, you know, guy that, Even if he sacrifices, you know, strikeouts for outs, that can at least be reliable. Currently, Baseball Reference has Neris penciled in as the closer, but I really like Pat Neshek. I don't know if he's necessarily the closer because he's near the end of his career, close to 40, but he's been solid every time he's been out there. Adam Morgan's been pretty good. Robertson. In his first stint with the Phillies, just hasn't looked confident at all. You know, his off-speed pitches have been have been poor as far as location. And Velasquez, I don't even think Gabe knows what to do with him. But I think they would be better suited off as well with going with a closer. I don't like the premise that Gabe has where, okay, I'm Gabe, I'm not going to have a closer, I'm just going to roll with it night in and night out. I think it's good to have situational sports, to have everybody have a role to do, and if you do your role and if you're a talented team, for the most part, you win games and you contend for the playoffs. And the fact that, we're over 10 games into the season and he hasn't designated a closer yet, still obviously very early on and we're not even in the middle of April yet, but I think that's something that Gabe needs to tie up. I think Nola will come around, still in the prime of his career. I think Pivetta is a guy that they just need to move on with. And I'm not sure what they think of Velasquez because they keep throwing him out there in the rotation, but I think he has good stuff. I just don't think he's the right fit as the number five guy. And as far as the lineup's just looked solid so far. The guys that have gotten bumped down to the bottom of the lineup, like Franco and even Herrera, they've both have had solid starts. Harper's lived up to his contract so far this year, still obviously in year one, and we're not even in 15 games in the year yet, but he's been solid. Hoskins has been one of the best sluggers in the National League. 5 home runs and 15 RBIs in his first 9 games and right around 300 batting. And McCutchen, I really like his defense. And Segura, the only thing I would like better from the lineup is more aggressiveness on the base paths. Coming into tonight, they only had 2 stolen bases in 11 games. And they have guys that have speed in Segura and in McCutcheon and even in some other guys like Hernandez. So so far, I think if I were to give a grade for the pitching, the starting pitching, the bullpen, the lineup, and the defense, I would go with an A for the batting. Starting pitching, I would go with probably a C. Bullpen, I would go with probably a D plus, C minus. And then the defense overall has been pretty good, so I would go with a B for that. I think the defense has shown its ability to stay in front of the ball. And Harper and McCutcheon, I think, have both adjusted to their roles in the outfield with their new teams.
Yep. I think with the bullpen, I think the bullpen hasn't been great, and I think there needs to be that guy that needs to be the closer, and I don't know who that is right now. So Anthony's been up and down so far. Robinson's been last outing, but that was like a blowout, if I remember. He didn't pitch tonight. Victor, what's his name?
Arellano?
Yeah, he pitched two scoreless innings, but they were up 9-1, so take that with a grain of salt. Let's see how he does in this, in a close game. Hopefully he doesn't suck, but what are your thoughts on what you saw tonight from the lineup bouncing back from that blowout win on Wednesday night?
I didn't watch the game tonight, but they I was really impressed with, you know, Joe might be able to speak on this because I wasn't able to catch the game tonight, but I really thought that the lineup really needed a game in a series like this versus a cellar dweller in the Marlins to turn around the poor performances they have lately. But what are your thoughts on that, Joe, on the game tonight?
Yeah, I mean, a game like this is definitely, especially when you're coming off of two really just bad losses, blowing a lead and then getting beat by 14 runs, turning around and having a big game like tonight where your pitching worked, your hitting worked, really everything that you do in a baseball game went right for you. So, you know, not looking for a three-game sweep here, but a three-game sweep would definitely be nice. But I do want to go back to Velasquez a little bit because I think him being in the bullpen just makes sense to me. You know, his secondary pitches aren't where you want them to be for a starter, and he's a guy who gasses himself out. So, you know, if you're limiting him to one, two innings a night where he can really amp up on his fastball, it makes the secondary pitches look a lot better than they do now when he's got to reserve and keep that tank full for five-plus innings. He really is a guy that's suited for the bullpen. Like you said, not a closer role because you just can't rely on him to throw strikes whenever he's out there, but definitely, you know, a six, maybe seven guy, eventually yeah. A matchup guy. And then once he gets really settled into his role there, then yeah, maybe he's a guy you can look at as a future closer down the road. But him as a starter, I think just has to, I think it has to be scrapped. You've seen enough from him at this point.
Yeah. How about bringing back Jared Eichhoff in from AAA and sending down Nick Pizzetta for like a couple weeks? What do you guys thought on that before we wrap up? Kyle or Joe?
Not really. I think Eichhoff has upside. I'm not exactly sure on what he can do, but one thing I am sure of that Joe mentioned, I really think that Mad Bum, Bumgarner, would be a huge addition to this rotation. And getting him, you would have to give up prospects, but you might not have to give up a draft pick like you would, you know, if you were trying to get what's his name?
Kimbrel?
No, the Keuchel, that's what I was thinking of. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, so you would have to give you would have to give up a draft pick, like you mentioned, if you signed him in free agency before June arrived. And I think they had the money to sign him and Kimbrel. But I think Bumgarner, who was on a bad team now, who was in a rebuild, the Giants had a new GM. Giants are not a contender anymore. And Bumgarner is still under 30. He still has good stuff. Obviously, he's arguably the best postseason pitcher ever, arguably the best pitcher in World Series World Series history, at least from a starting pitching standpoint. And he's a Silver Slugger, too. So, honestly, I think he makes the most sense right now. He had a poor spring training, but he's off to a good start so far this year in the first couple games that he's had with San Francisco. And then he was injured a little bit the last couple years, but he's been consistent year in and year out. He really hasn't had a bad year. He's going to be a guy that throws around 200 innings, strikes out around, per nine innings, 8.5 guys. And he's going to give you maybe a couple home runs. And then obviously we know what his resume is come postseason time. 8-3, 2.1 ERA in the postseason, and then undefeated in the World Series. So he's a guy that I would be targeting over anybody else's return, even if it's a guy that's already in the minor leagues rehabbing or a guy that has some potential that could, fill out the rotation. I would go with a guy like Baumgartner, who's more experienced more than anything.
All right. Since we have to wrap up, we want to give our plugs on Twitter. You want to go first, Joe?
Truth Happens, 316. Go ahead, Gus.
And you can reach me on Twitter and at Kyle_Lutz, LUTZ _.
And you can follow me at Big E Jacinto. That's Big E JACINTO. And give us a follow for our podcast. That's WSP Podcast. And follow us on Stitcher too. We're now on Stitcher and soon to be on iTunes. And any final thoughts, guys, before we wrap up?
Well, thanks for having me on, Eric.
Yep. You're welcome. And Joe, thanks for having me on, guys. Yep. And until next time, guys, so long. Have a good night.